Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here for KTH 101.9, Tacoma's low-power FM station. As we used to say back in the 70s, all low-power to the people. We're talking about climate today. The show is Climate Talk, the place where we ask the important questions. What's happening with the climate? What can we do about it? The place where we always, to the extent possible, are fact-based and, of course, always respectful. I would love to hear from you, especially if you disagree with me on something. You can contact me anytime by sending an email to tacoma@citizensclimatelobby.org, and I'll put your comments on the air. And at the same time, doing my very best to respond to your points in a thoughtful and fact-based and respectful manner. Today I'm going to be talking about proposed legislation that's out there both nationally in the U.S. House and the Senate and down in Olympia. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Education and the political arm Citizens Climate Lobby. You know, I want to talk for a second about this idea of being a lobby. I've been down to Olympia a couple times this legislative session, and I've been a citizen lobbyist, in a manner of speaking. I've visited my elected representatives, the representatives and the Senate from my district, and talked to them with others about stuff we're concerned about. You know, it's just really painfully apparent the difference between the citizens that are down there doing their duty and talking to their elected representatives versus the professional lobbyists. These guys are in their three-piece suits, highly shined shoes, neatly trimmed hair, and their red power ties, and it's real obvious they know their way around, as opposed to just plain folks who find the whole situation down there pretty confusing and hard to figure out. So when I say I'm involved with an organization called Citizens Climate Lobby, always put that within the framework of the citizens part. We're just ordinary folks out there with no axe to grind other than our worries and cares and concerns about the future of the planet and the impacts that climate are going to have on that future. So let's turn our attention first to what's going on in the U.S. Congress. Last fall, a bill was introduced titled Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It was introduced in the House, and later a companion bill was introduced in the Senate. That same House bill has been introduced. For those of you keeping track, it's H.R. 763. Introduction into the Senate is still pending, but expected any time. What does that bill propose we do? The simple version is that it places a price on carbon emissions. The price is escalating over time, and the escalation of the price is determined by what our fossil fuel carbon dioxide output is over time. That is, as output decreases, then the need to raise the price of fossil fuels will decrease also. The very first question that's asked is, okay, where does the money go? And in this bill, the money is paid back to the populace in the form of a dividend. It's a per-person dividend, and so the benefit proportionally is larger the lower on the economic scale a person or a family unit is, and the more wealthy people will end up with bigger bills for their carbon fuels and so on. Economists and other experts for a long time have been saying that the best way to reduce fossil fuel emissions is to put a price on those emissions. And I'll just make a quick aside on that topic here, and that is that the fossil fuel industry really has been subsidized by being excused from managing their effluent, their pollutants. They're dumping the stuff out into the environment. Other people are paying the cost of that, not the companies. So it's reasonable and appropriate that a price be put on that and that price be returned to the citizens who are dealing with the results of that pollution. Now, some will say it's just another tax. Really, it's not just another tax, because the money, after a small administration fee, which is expected to be 3% or less, once established, will be returned to the populace. The government doesn't keep it, so it's not a matter of another tax and more revenue to the government. There are also protections regarding import and export of fossil fuels, protection for our exporters, and fees on imports of fossil fuels. I think everybody can see the rationale for that. If there were no such restriction on importing, then domestic producers would be at a disadvantage, and consumers, businesses, industry would just import fossil fuel from outside the United States because it would be cheaper with no fee. Also, as a further quick aside, our neighbors of the north in Canada, British Columbia, have put a fee on fossil fuels up there, and it's resulted in a decrease in the use of fossil fuels, as you might expect. Something costs more, people use less of it. One of the expectations with a fee on fossil fuels would be that over time, individuals and industry would turn more and more to non-fossil fuel sources, which will go even further towards reducing the pollution that we're producing into the atmosphere with carbon dioxide. Now, I can hear somebody out there, maybe a bunch of somebodies, scoffing at the idea of this bill because of the present climate in Washington, D.C. I recently saw an interesting stat. It was about scientists, and there are a handful of scientists here and there who deny that fossil fuel pollution is causing global warming. Just a handful, around 0.3% of all published scientists out of 60 or 70,000 that have been published in the last couple, 3 years on the topic. Here's the irony. There are more climate change deniers in the House of Representatives than there are scientists out of a 70,000 group of scientists versus 435 representatives. So what's the chance of this bill becoming law? There's a fairly good chance that it's going to come out of the House if it gets enough attention, but highly unlikely that it would pass the Senate, and certainly if it did pass the Senate, it would face a certain veto by President Trump. One of my friends, when I was talking about this bill, asked me in an innocent kind of way, what do you suppose the chances of this bill becoming law are? And I replied to him, well, you're familiar with the snowball in hell concept, right? So that brings up the question, why would anybody bother? The simple answer is that legislation has to start somewhere, and even though there's a pretty tough climate for anybody who's concerned about climate change in Washington, D.C., the process is a long, involved, difficult one, as so many political processes are, especially ones with the reach of climate change. If you are concerned about this bill, I certainly urge you to contact your representative in Congress. It does make a difference, and I'm going to be talking more about that towards the end of the program. So that's the national scene. Let's take a look down towards Olympia for a bit here. The number one item in terms of climate change and fossil fuel pollution is the governor's 100% clean energy initiative. Now, this initiative is not a simple thing. If you want to understand it, you're going to have to do your homework. The goal is to reduce carbon emissions in the state of Washington. This Inslee initiative doesn't include any fee or tax on carbon, which I suppose is not surprising given the track record of previous efforts to do the same. We've had a couple of statewide initiatives that have failed at the ballot box, and there have been other efforts over the last few years to put a price or some kind of cap or a cap and trade on carbon emissions in the state of Washington, none of them successful. In a certain respect, that's not hugely surprising given the amount of money that the fossil fuel industry has put into defeating those efforts to put a fee on carbon. And the math there is real simple. If the cost of carbon goes up, then the profits of the fossil fuel companies go down. What the Inslee effort does is to use the budgetary process to allocate funds to certain areas with the intention of reducing fossil fuel emissions. funds would be provided for modernizing the electric grid and providing energy sources from non-fossil sources. There would be funds devoted to research and development of clean energy sources. There would be some funds provided to nonprofit lenders to provide capital for organizations that might otherwise not be able to access it. I think one of the most promising things in there is an effort to promote electric vehicles in the state, including expanding the number of charging stations, high-speed charging stations that are available, and moving the state motor pool towards more electric vehicles. There's a move to require steeper energy codes for new construction, especially in public buildings like schools and state buildings. There are financial incentives for retrofitting commercial buildings and establishment of energy standards for equipment. I personally own an electric vehicle. It's a 2018 Nissan Leaf. Love that vehicle, by the way. It feels really good to drive down the highway knowing I'm not putting out any emissions. And because I charge it off of Tacoma Public Utilities, which is 97% hydro, I'm really doing net zero emissions with my transportation. And so the governor's initiative includes things like a $1,000 discount on newer used electric vehicles, some efforts to install more fast charging stations, and to require that new commercial and multifamily buildings have high-speed charging stations installed for their residents and customers and employees. So here's a fun new thing, and that is funding to build two electric hybrid ferries for the Washington State Ferry System, and also to convert two of the existing ferries to electric hybrid. Now, unfortunately, and that is unfortunately from my point of view, some of the incentives for installing residential solar are running out or have run out, and the governor is offering support for some renewed incentives for residential solar. The big picture on the bill is that utilities would be producing clean energy, i.e. that is not using coal or natural gas for producing electricity by 2045. According to the governor's office, putting all of them together would reduce state carbon emissions to 25% below the 1990 levels, and that would happen by 2035. Sounds like it might be a long ways away, but it's not so far when you look at the big picture. So let's talk a bit about, open quote, what to do about it, close quote. What are we as individuals going to do? Well, there's a bunch of stuff we can do as individuals, but that only gets us part of the way towards limiting the carbon emissions to the place they have to be limited to. That's about a third of the carbon emissions are within our control. That's things like how much we drive, how many airplane trips we take, where we set our thermostat, those kind of things. The rest of the stuff requires legislation. So how do you figure out how to make that contact with your elected representative so that you can voice your opinion on these pending bills? There's a website on www.usa.gov. If you do a search for Contact My Elected Representative, look for that particular link. And it's a really easy, user-friendly, one-size-fits-all website that will take you to both your national representatives and your state representatives. All you got to know is where you live, and we'll figure all the rest of it out for you. Now, there's some question about how effective emails and phone calls are. Actually, they're very effective. They're effective in this regard. Our elected representatives toed up on a regular basis what they've heard from the constituents about and where the constituents stand. So your efforts will have an effect. Small, but when we're together and when we're expressing our opinions in a significant way, we can make a change. We can affect the outcome of things. So I'm encouraging you to not remain silent on these issues. So that's it for today. Thanks for listening. John Doherty here, KTAH 101.9, reminding you to always live like the mountain is out.